Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So he's got Heather, he's happy, he's got a castle. Now they make love in the gorse, which is quite spiky, and the heather, and her name's Heather.
Yeah.
I did notice a bit of lace front late the at the temple, post love
making
coitus interruptus.
Yes,
there was a bit of a flap of lace at the temple on Christoph Lambert in that scene.
Ah, with the wig.
Yeah, coming off. It's silly that they've missed that, isn't it? But apparently, Russell Mackay was a very, very frenetic kind of, oh, right, let's try this.
Mm.
And they said, the producer went, the continuity woman was just in bits because it was just couldn't keep up with him, she said.
To be fair, I'm usually really good at seeing a wig and thinking, oh, that looks bad. But I think the wigs are pretty good in this.
They are good, but there's a definite flap here.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because he does dunk his head in a barrel of water and bring it out without
the wig
falling
off. I think so. Well, if it's like, I thought that. And obviously it's took its toll on the spirit gum just a bit later.
Yeah,
needed re-dabbing. And then here we go.
Yeah.
The entry.
Yeah.
With one of the greatest introductions. Greetings. I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist of King Charles of V of Spain, and I'm at your service.
Yeah.
And she says, who? Which I think's a joke.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, it's good.
And it's then the weather changes, because with Ramirez comes more than just a visit. There's the lightning, the sky's darken, don't they?
Yes.
And he starts to feel wrong. And then there's we're back to the old 1500s treatment of women, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Go away and talk.
I'll stay right here. He goes, go in the house. Heather. And she goes, I'll stay right here. He goes, do as I say, woman.
Mm.
But you got to remember, his accent's not bad because he doesn't speak English.
Mm.
So he's learned to... I'm sure Sean helped him along the way.
I bet he did. And
in the only
toilet.
7 days he was there.
Yeah.
Now, then the quickening happening now is a bit...
Yeah, I don't understand
random.
That. And also, we should have a sequence where we see McLeod do this, because why is Ramirez... turning up at McLeod to tell him he's in Highlander, because there must be other Highlanders as well.
Yes.
That McLeod could go and see and do the same service, if you like.
He did. So he's kind of like the mentor. So he's Mr. Miyagi, he's Yoda.
Yeah.
He's that. He is that kind of,
Which is why it surprises me that there wasn't a Highlander sequel, unless 3 and 4 do that. I haven't seen them. Where he does the same job, because otherwise it just seems to be stupid.
I know. It turns up as a ghost in the second one, doesn't it? In the middle of a Shakespeare play, I seem to remember. I've only ever seen it once.
He comes back to life, in a Shakespeare's play. And they say, get off the stage, shithead. And he goes, shithead.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. It's terrible.
No wonder the writer just separated himself from it. He's the producer who wrote it, that with the co-wrote the first, said that it became something he hadn't envisaged. Now that's either a caveat for I did a terrible job, or Hollywood's gone, no, you gotta have this, that's great, you know, and then ruined it.
It does that thing that's now called retconning, where you just change the plot of the first one to suit your needs in the second one.
Really?
Like you say, suddenly they're aliens from another planet.
Not buying it.
No, stupid. And as we'll get to at the end, they don't need to, and I'll explain why, but we get there. But so, yeah, he's come to mentor Connor.
Cut to a montage of Connor stood on cliffs being struck by lightning.
Yeah. What you're feeling now
is the quickening. Yes. Mm. Which is like, it's just not referred to, and it appears from nowhere, and kind of, I'm glad Heather's in the house, because she would just go, what's going on?
Yeah.
What are you two up to?
Yeah. Yeah, he says that we were born immortals, and in the end, there can be only one.
Yes, there is a lot, quite a bit of exposition.
A lot.
There's a hell of a lot of this, but it needs to be there, because, yes, because is this the bit where he says, when your head comes off its shoulders, it's all over?
It's all over.
Yeah, so they can only die via decapitation.
That's right.
Which I would imagine in the Napoleonic thing, they thought, hang on, the guillotine.
Guillotine, that's terrible.
He could have had that where they go, no, hang him. And then go, you could have had a Jeopardy scene like that.
Yeah.
I've changed my mind. You egg him. I mean, they hang him.
Or someone else gets guillotined and Connor gets the old quickening from it.
Yes. Mm. Oh, yeah.
He shows her will be drawn to a faraway land for the gathering and the final battle for the prize.
The faraway land being New York, New York. So good they named it twice.
That's right. So we get a montage of them running on the beach, training, riding horses.
Training, the stag, feel the stag, he feels the stag, he runs and all that. There's a brilliant bit where... oh, yeah. My favourite scene...
Go on.
Well, we got the transition here from the fish tank where he's sharpening the sword, and he goes, sometimes, MacLeod, the sharpest blade is not enough. Mm. And then it goes into the fish tank, up to the waterline, and the waterline is the lock in Scotland.
So good.
Now, they explained they put a tank, they shot the tank from the outside, then they shot the tank inside the water. So they put a tank in the water.
In the
lock.
Yeah, that's clever.
So that's how they did it. But they said the edit, we had to make sure that the waterline kind of was at the right balance for a smooth transition.
It works perfectly.
And it works so amazingly. That's probably the best one.
I think it is. It's the one that stands out.
Yeah. It's like magic.
Mm, it's a kind of magic.
So my favourite scene is the balancing on the boat.
Yes.
He goes, you're like a woman, you Spanish people. I go, I'm not Spanish, I'm Egyptian. You said you were Spanish. You're a liar. You have the manners of a goat, and you smell like a dung heap. And you have absolutely no knowledge whatsoever of your potential. You look like a woman, you stupid haggis. Haggis, watch that. Sheep's stomach stuffed with meat and barley. And what do you do with it? You eat it. How revolting. He's taking snuff. Achoo! Don't you tip us over. And he falls in the water. And when I can't swim, you Spanish peacock. Well, you cannot die. You're immortal. And there's a shot of him in a tank in the studio. This is great because he's dressed in some pond weed and a few rocks.
Mm.
He has a slash at because the weight of the sword under the water, quite an admirable strike at the old pond weed.
Yeah.
And then goes, ha, 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 starts laughing in a French accent.
And that's the first of his cheeky laughs because he does it all the way through from this film, this bit onwards.
Yeah. That's it.
It's kind of like the French Sid James.
He is.
Yeah.
And he can breathe underwater because he's immortal.
That's right. You cannot die, damn you.
And then there's training, more training. It's like Mickey and Rocky, isn't it, really?
It is. And you get the last shot of two men who clearly aren't Sean Connery and Christoph Lambert standing
on a big rock. On a huge rock. Up in the Isle of Skye, that was, that shot.
Yeah, waving swords at each other. Then one drops. Sean Connery avatar drops his.
He does. And that's. How did they find that sword? I hope that Highlander. I hope that the immortals are magic because they must be because there weren't no metal detectors then.
No, and then he says,
"I do like the because he's a stuntman. He's not really an actor, and he's got his hands on his haunches and he's looking down, shaking his head."
Yes, it's great.
It's great.
Shouting down. It's probably shouting down from a helicopter with a megaphone. Now put your fucking hands on your hips, mate.
Oh, no, I know. But really he said they were terrified that the rotors would blow them off the top.
Oh, God.
So it's an actual chopper shot.
Yeah.
You did it with a drone now. They'd have dropped them in. That would have flown off and the drone would have got them. But the actual weight, the rotors, the air pressure from that, they said they were really worried that the chopper would send them off the thing.
And then he says, now McLeod, welcome to the quickening or something. And then they jump off the cliff into the water.
Yeah, into the water. There's a brilliant musical bit what I love where they're training and he for the first time, disarms Sean Connery and he falls.
Mm.
He goes, if it came to the two of us, would you take my head?
Yeah.
And then the music goes from the minor. And you know that they're both good guys.
Yes.
But there can be only one. But I think if it came down to them two, they just wouldn't bother.
You wouldn't, would you, if you were mates with someone? You'd just be like, we're doing all right. Why do we need
it's
to do
all
this?
Right. I know. But you've got to have a nutter like the Kurgan who wants the prize.
Yeah. But what is the prize? Because as we find out later on, spoiler alert, the prize is you become mortal.
Yeah, and you know everything and feel everything.
God, my God. What does that mean,
like
though?
Torture.
Yeah,
I know it's a bit ambiguous, isn't it?
And you've gone from this life where you've lived forever to suddenly going, well, I'll probably die in 20 years.
I've just seen what I've put here. I hate you. Good, that's a perfect way to start. There we go. Then there's now I was trying to work out what's the income of the McLeod.
Oh yeah.
Because she says, oh, I may pay myself a new dress.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, now I seem to think, no, because she went, oh, he's a lively one. She's bought a chicken.
Mm.
And she's got spare groats for a frock. And I'm thinking, well, where's your source of income? What's going on?
Yeah, they haven't got like a working farmer out, have they? So
no. I mean, they have got some wild... Maybe
he's
eggs.
A blacksmith, isn't he? He's a blacksmith.
He's a blacksmith.
Yeah, of course.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, well, very, very great job then. Really good.
Yeah, he's the best blacksmith. Well, at this point, he's had a few years of experience, but in a few years, he'd have...
Yes, he's good.
Yeah.
So this is when it starts getting a bit sad because we realise immortality is a curse, and Sean says, you must leave her. You must leave her.
You must let Heather go.
You must let her go.
He talks about a Chinese bride he had.
Yes, her. She was Shikiko.
Mm.
And her father, Masamune, made me this sword. The metal folded 200 times. And which comes in later with Brenda, who is a metallurgist and an expert thing. She knows, but that she went, a sword like this can't exist.
Yeah.
So Sean's rocking this ivory handle, beautiful. Oh. You can buy all these, can't you now?
Yeah.
But you can buy the McLeod Claymore, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
You can buy that, and you can buy the Samurai Mashimonish 200 times folded thing. You can probably get the Kurgan. You will be able to get the Kurgans. Mm. I would imagine you'll get an assembly Kurgan.
You would, in a little suitcase presentation.
Oh, I bet it's not cheap, you know.
Oh, no.
No.
I'd probably get the Connery pearl earring.
Would you go for that?
Yeah.
I might go for the hat with a peacock fur.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, that's nice. Pick the kids up in that.
I think you'd rock that, yeah.
Yeah.
As you say, he's loved and lost before.
He's had three wives, so he's learned the hard way.
Which is the sort of thing Elizabeth Taylor used to tell people.
Yes.
Yeah.
He'd learned the hard way, because it's like hard. He's done it three times. Yeah. You know, I've only done it once, and I won't be doing it again.
I tried it once, and I didn't like it.
Didn't like it, yeah. That's... Such a great joke, that.
It is, really is.
Karen Campin?
Yeah, Abroad.
Abroad?
Yeah.
Yes, the crazy, the woman. Was it Terry Scott?
It's June Whitfield. It's Kenneth Connor's married to her. And Sid and Joan, yeah.
What's the one where Peter Butterworth is everything?
That's Karen Abroad.
That's it. He's the chef and the maitre d'.
Bloodings, Stovings.
Bloodings, that's it.
Chips and Beanings, yeah.
So...
Yeah.
It says Kurgan here, the strongest of the immortals.
That's right.
He's the strongest one.
Is this when he's...
The Kurgan.
It would work. Actually, it would work if he was the Kurgan, because he could go through time. Like, in one era, he's Tony Farino.
Yeah, then he's Partridge.
Ernest Moss.
Yeah, Ernest Moss.
Yeah.
And then the not-so-successful... the roadie.
Oh, yeah, Saxondale.
Saxondale.
Yeah.
We don't talk about him.
Go on, stick the boot in, John. Go on.
Steve knows. He knows. But you know what I love? So there's a big plot hole here. Massive, massive, massive plot hole.
Go on.
Sean Connery, Ramirez, is alone with Heather in Connor's castle.
Yeah.
Where is Connor?
I looked this up and all it says is he's away.
Ridiculous.
Don't know where. Maybe he's delivering
a sword. Well, he's going to
Glasgow. He's going to Glasgow.
He's going to Socky Hall Street for a haggis pie, for a scotch pie, deep fried but battered pie.
He's doing the Glasgow Empire.
Honestly, just ridiculous. But, you know, like just like we had Christoph Lambert's Sixth Sense when the Fazil was in the basement of the...
Yeah.
There's a Sean's reaction here. Speaking from an acting point of view as an actor, is just splendid.
Yeah.
That knows something. Heather, get out.
Yeah.
It gives me goosebumps, that reaction.
Yeah. What slightly ruins it is when the Kurgan bursts through the door and when the door goes to pieces, you can see it's balsa wood.
Polystyrene.
Yeah, polystyrene. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you about that. It went wrong, that.
Did it?
Yeah, yeah. So, I'll tell you what happened. They only had one shot at it because there was only one door. Supposed they went through it with the stunt fighter ranger and it was swing to the right, to the left. Blah, blah. So Clancy came through. And he's supposed to put his blow, once he comes through, his blows were all supposed to go to the left. He went to the right, and there was a practical candelabra on a table next. He hit it, it went flying through the air, whizzed past Sean Connery's ear, and it ended up in the crew.
Oh.
And Sean Connery walked off.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because it was such a close call. And then they had to really console Clancy because he was in bits.
Oh.
Because he was only young and he'd working with this the enigma that is Mr. Connery.
Yeah.
And they had to say, look, it was an accident, you know. And he said, sorry, I just got a bit carried away. Zai got carried away. And that happened in that scene.
He said, you're fucking right, you're dead.
Yeah. But you only had 7 days on Sean. I mean, I don't really like all that kind of... You know, not turning up for your reverses where you've just shoot on one actor and then a double stands in for you. And
yeah, he did that a lot, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, because the golf was number one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It goes on today a lot where actors won't just go home early. And I just think, you're being paid. Do your bit.
Yeah.
Do your bit. I think one of the worst, the first cases of it, John, was on the waterfront with Rod Steiger in the back of the taxi.
Oh, is it?
Randall
really?
Was not there, yeah. When when your singles on Rod, no, not there. And then there's the other thing. If you do over the shoulder, like they call it a dirty two, where you can see a bit of the actor.
Yeah.
They have to find an actor that same height, same build, put them in a wig, put them in a costume, you know what I mean? It's just like, just read in.
Yeah, I mean, everyone should, day one, you should be made to watch the Michael Caine acting class.
I think so. Look at Andy Serkis. He's scurrying around in all fours going, precious.
That's right,
He does it. He's there, hands on.
Yeah.
And, of course, Mr. Coca-Jaja, he had the head on top of his head.
That's right.
A very popular character that was, too.
Well, never worked again.
No. So the big battle.
Yes.
And this is where the home comes under the hammer, literally, but under the sword.
Yeah.
And then we realise that the pointing of this particular castle is shocking.
Shocking. It's possibly been done like that Changing Rooms episode where they made the hanging shelves full of teapots.
That's right.
And they all
it all goes, doesn't it?
That's what they should have said when they went to that woman and said, they should have said, well, the Kurgan showed up. And fought with Sean Connery in your living room.
He swung his sword the wrong direction. I'm afraid your teapots are... they're no more. And they're not immortal, I'm afraid.
No. There can be only one left.
Femme Fatale screaming in here.
Yes.
Oh, she might cut us, improve your voice.
And then he says, is that MacLeod's woman? And he says, no, she's with me.
Exactly. And then he falls. So he's had a throat cut.
Yeah.
A real running in.
I don't
right
know
in.
Why Connery stabs him in the stomach with a sword. What's the point?
Exactly.
Pardon the pun.
And he ends up on it. I was gutted when.
Oh,
I just thought. Because if you watch it for the first time, you think he's going to go the distance. He's one of the stars. When that head comes off on the top of that, when that animated little action man gets his head chopped
off,
stop frame.
Yeah.
On that stairwell. That's, I mean, there's a pop video thing there going on, isn't
oh,
there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Lightning. And then, a bit of comedy fall from the Kurgan. And then he appears. Hello, pretty. Mm. And poor Heather. Because Sean asks, who's the woman?
Yes.
And Sean goes, she's mine.
Yeah. Which is important later.
Yeah, but he's a bit of a one anyway, because he said the story he's telling Heather, he goes, I swung through the window, and unfortunately, the lady had gone. Oh, she went, what did you do? He went, I introduced myself to the lady that was there, and she was most helpful. Well, I wouldn't. Would you, Connor, would you go away to Glasgow Empire and leave your missus with a man that tells stories like that?
To be fair, he was sharing the bill with Des O'Connor, so he had to go.
Okay. Oh, well, of course. And it was one of those sad, terrible winters, Mike and Bernie.
There's two of them.
Yes. That's true, isn't it? Oh, Christ, there's two of them. Through the curtains. Oh, dear.
Well, three if you count Schnorbits.
So we are... devastated.
Yeah, so Connor, he comes home and then we basically get a montage of him living out the rest of Heather's days. She comes over the hill as an old lady.
That's right.
And he says, he says, my God, Heather, you look fucking dreadful.
It's the makeup's really not good. Yeah, the hair's right, but it's just like...
Oh. And we also get, who wants to live forever?
I don't mind that song.
That's brilliant. That's Brian May, you know.
That's Brian. That.
Yeah, that's his one.
That's his one. Yeah. Which is Roger Taylor's?
It's Kind of Magic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Did Freddie write one?
Yeah, he did Princes of the Universe, I think.
Oh, I like that as well. Yeah, it's a great soundtrack, isn't it? And what about the Deacon?
I don't think Deacon did anything.
Did he not?
Maybe.
He's the quiet man, isn't he?
He's the one. I remember in the papers when it was the it was some sort of Queen anniversary recently. And Queen, that's right, because Queen were doing the Jubilee concert, you know, before Queen died.
Yeah.
And the papers had Queen, you know, appearing at wherever it was, and then they papped John Deacon going out to buy some beer in a blue bag from an offie.
Oh, dear.
So he was John Bagger Cans Deacon.
It's like Sid Barrett, they used to like trying to find him, didn't they? And it was just like... It's like the brother in The Cause. He never gets a look in, does he? The girls get all the attention.
Well, he is a bit loopy, though, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
A bit anti-vax and all that.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, one of them, is he?
But I think John Deacon, Sid Barrett, was properly not well, but I think John Deacon's fine. He just didn't want to...
He's fine, just don't want the fame, yeah. He wrote another one back the dust, didn't he?
He did.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So Heather has passed away.
Sadly, passed away. And the MacLeod sword, the claimant is the grave, the marker.
Yeah.
The grave.
Someone had that away a couple of days.
I just went, what are you doing? And then I went, hang on, you've got Sean's sword.
He's taken sword.
You've got Mashimoni's 200 folded blade.
Yeah.
So we're back in New York.
She comes to see Connor and says, I want to know about this sword that's from 600 BC.
She does.
Yeah.
And she knows from her tests that the blade was folded. So she said a sword like this is not supposed to exist.
Yeah.
And Sean, and then Christoph comes up with a lovely chat up line. He goes, do you cook? She goes, yes. He goes, I thought we might have dinner. And now...
I'll show you another sword.
Which is basically, I'm coming into your flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, not like normally you go, would you like to go for dinner?
Yeah.
So if anyone's watching and they want to get things moving quickly in a dating situation is, do you cook? Yes. I thought we might have dinner together. Which is quite sexist.
It is a bit.
Really, you're doing the cooking.
But also I'd asterisk that with a little footnote saying it also helps if you look and sound like Christoph Lambert in 1986.
Yes, and we're Deodora's.
Yeah, Deodora's essential.
She's on to Connor. She's on to him. And then we have a great transition. It's breaking the crossfade.
Well, we're introduced to Rachel, aren't we?
Yeah, and there's... Rachel is his secretary. That's or right. Kind of runs the antiquity shop.
Yes.
Played by Dennis Lawson's late wife, who was lovely, was with my agent, with JM Associates.
Yeah.
I met her once because it was one of those nice old boutique agencies.
Yeah.
Where it was on Beak Street in London. You just go in and have a brew.
Sheila
and
Gish.
You never know who would be in there.
Yeah.
And you just sit on the sofa and have a cup of tea. But they're all a bit kind of like, you know, LA and disconnected phone, you know, headsets, and they're not as friendly as they used to be.
Sheila Gish.
She was in there, and she was Dennis Lawson's wife.
Oh, I had no idea.
Sadly passed away.
Yeah, not long ago.
Yeah. Very, very sad. So
another Star Wars connection with Dennis Lawson, of course.
Of course. Is he Red...
Wedge Antilles.
Wedge Antilles, yeah, that's right.
He always
he's
had
played
his pants
by three different
really
people,
high.
I think. Is that right?
I don't know. I thought it was always Dennis, wasn't it?
Something about that. There's another guy in it. There's a... I had a book, and there's stills with him in it, and he's Biggs Darklighter.
Oh, right.
Yes. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, Garrett Brown, wasn't he?
With a tash?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got pretty much cut out completely of Star Wars, didn't he?
Yeah, it's rotten, that, isn't it?
Yeah, that must suck.
So Sheila Gish is Rachel, and we wonder. Well, we don't know where Rachel's come from.
Where's Rachel come from?
Exploding, shattering glass transition. Another amazing one.
Yeah.
Nazi Germany.
Yeah. She's hiding from a Nazi.
He opens it up. I don't really know where this is set because she's English.
Yes.
So,
no idea.
And he goes. He goes, you're like me, you're alone.
Mm.
And then you see a very evil-looking great... Mm. Do you know he reminded me of Matthew Horn?
Oh, yeah.
He looks a bit like him.
Yeah.
And
his name's Matthew Heil.
Yes. I love all those plays on all the Germans where you have... you use hair, but it's like... your name? He goes, Herr Dreyer.
Oh, and nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. League of Gentlemen had hair lip.
Yes, hair lip. Yeah. Hair treatment and hair product. And anything, hair. What is your name? Hairdresser.
Hmm. Camp one could be called hairdo.
Yes, yeah. Hairdo. Yeah. She's saved, and then he gets shot, and she goes... Oh, this is then. There's a bit of a kind of breaking the fourth wall here with the song of the thing. But maybe the song was written around the.
It was. This came first. Roger Taylor heard the line and thought, "That's a good name. A good name
great.
For a song."
What a great hook! Yeah. Then he gone, "Oh, that's brilliant. I'm glad it's worked. Not the other way around."
Mm. Yes.
He goes, "Hey, it's the kind of magic." Mm. Then, because he doesn't die when the Nazi shoots him,
I'm waiting.
And then he
say
gets
the
up. Ich muss dich leider schießen. He says. Which translates as, you'll have to shoot me first.
Ah. Oh.
And he goes, whatever you say, Jack, you're the master race. And he goes, bang, gone. And Rachel, saved. Rachel is the little girl.
That's right.
And he has adopted her, basically.
But when he uses the machine gun, it's one of my bugbears in film, is that when someone shoots the gun and they just flinch and blink all the way through it.
Oh, all that.
Yeah.
I don't like it when they waggle it around.
Yeah.
It would like, I mean, there's less chance of hitting him. They don't hold it stock still.
No. But he does that thing like someone who's not, I'm not saying you have to use a
gun. Me
and
Steve Coogan used to say, it's like when people drive in old movies, the steering wheel's like going left and right. And I said, you should do a wide from behind. And it's all over the road. Right. Where are we? Rachel.
So we then flash forward. And Rachel says that you never let anyone love you. You'll always be alone.
Yes. She feels his pain because she knows his story.
Mm. And I think maybe she holds a little torch for him.
She does. Mm. I think so. But it's kind of like almost incestuous. They can't be like that because, no, that can't happen. Just be wrong.
It's like he met her when she was a child. He's not Bill Wyman.
No, he's not. Definitely not. No U-tree going on here.
No.
It's funny because I saw a guy repairing trainers the other day. My girlfriend made a joke. She went, what you do is you... I said, what do you do to get the dints out at the end, you know, of the trainer?
Yeah.
And you put a shoe tree in it and steam it. She went, is it called Operation Shoe Tree?
That would be good if there was some sort of... Well, not good, but if there was some sort of sexual exploitation going on in the shoe business.
What, Operation Shoe Tree?
Operation Shoe Tree,
yeah. Brilliant. I don't think they're great, you know, because the guy said, I don't want anyone to sell you these because he went, they'll keep your shoes as bright the day you, good as the day you bought them.
Yeah.
He admitted the guy. He turns up at Rachel's, is it now?
He goes to Brenda's flat.
To Brenda's, that's right.
Yeah, and she goes, oh, make yourself at home. I'll just go and fix my hair.
I'd love to know what she's cooking, but we never find out.
We never find out because he looks, immediately finds a gun.
He does.
Finds that she's tape recording everything.
That's right, in a box, a cigar box, and then looks out the window and says, nice view. Yeah. She went, oh, you think? Right. And
I love your apartment, Brenda.
And then he says, he gives her a gift.
Mm.
And the gift is her own book.
So he's been playing with her. Yeah.
You bastard. Mm. I thought it was a bit strong. Mm. It's a bit strong.
He might have been asking her to sign it.
Yeah, he could have been, couldn't he? Mm. He goes, what are you going to do? Turn off the tape recorder or shoot me with a 45? Why has that bald policeman been watching? So he's on to the whole setup.
Yeah.
And she, when I don't work for them, she's trying to, she's like fascinated by him. She wants to know about the Mashamoni sword.
Yeah.
She wants to know that. She fancies him.
Yeah.
She really has to try and sell it to him that she, because she knows he's prime suspect for the Fazil chopping. And then he gets his brandy out. And there's a classic American thing here because they're very, very fucking blasé about things French. Mm. Like they call a chaise lounge a chaise lounge.
Yeah.
And creme de menthe. They call creme de menthe is creme de menthe.
Mm.
And he says, brandy bottled in 1783. She goes, that's old. That's old. And I'd have gone, the date's over. Is that all you can say? Imagine what that's worth. It was a very good year. Mozart wrote its great mass. The Montgolfier brothers went up in their first balloon. And England recognized the independence of the United States.
And she goes, is that true?
Does she say that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, oh, fucking hell.
This woman's like a qualified scientist.
I know.
Oh, dear.
And you just see him reach down, pull his trousers back up, zip up and leave.
She's very, but quite eccentric. She's very selfish, really. She just wants to know about the sword.
He mentions that in a minute, doesn't he?
Yeah. So I don't think, I mean, there's obviously a spark between them, but it's not really apparent. You know, I would have thought, well, she's only after me for my sword.
Well, we've all been there.
Yeah, exactly.
So he goes to meet Castagir on the bridge.
He does.
Hugh Quashie from Casualty.
And he's done Star Wars, hasn't he?
He has. He was in The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And he was in Clive Barker's Nightbreed.
Is he in that?
Yeah.
Is he a creature?
I think he's a policeman.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that film.
I do like that film as well. It's very underrated.
I think so. I love Cronenberg's body in that. It's fantastic.
Great mask.
Really good mask.
And all the monster design, and that's really fun.
Very, very good.
Yeah, and the music's good. Danny Elfman.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah.
So
they reminisce. They're basically like, well, it's soon the gathering, but do you remember in 1783, that duel?
Yes.
And then we get him flailing around being drunk while the man,
yes, the comedy scene. This is a pivotal comedy scene where he allows himself for calling his wife a bloated warthog, I believe.
Bloated warthog.
And it's Mr. Bassett and his effeminate fop, Hotchkiss.
That's right.
Connor survives several stabbings.
Mm-hmm.
This is Boston Common, 1783.
That's right, yeah.
And he goes, which is funny, there's an ironic thing here. He goes, his wig falls off his face. He goes, Christ, I've gone blind. And I thought, well, you are already.
Yeah.
Because he can't, apparently, he's allergic to contact lenses.
That's right. That was it. I couldn't remember.
But that's the whole thing. He's wielding swords everywhere. It's like, whoa, terrifying. Cool, blind, it's scary. So he's been run through about three times. And the very camp Mr. Hotchkiss says, shoot him, sir. Shoot him. Shoot him in the back, sir. And at this point, Mr. Bassett has had enough. He has both dueling pistols and shoots Hotchkiss. He gets it in the back with both guns.
Yeah.
Kurgan in the motel.
Oh, I was going to say as well, if I was Connor, I want more scenes. Because you mentioned him window cleaning for Napoleon.
Yes.
I want him doing more things.
It's not a joke, that either. That was said. Mm. Yeah, yeah. It was said on the interview.
I'd like to see him perhaps doing the spaghetti trees practical joke for the BBC in the 50s.
Fantastic.
Or inside the elephant that did the poo on Blue Peter. That would be good.
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
It's on my foot.
That would be brilliant. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of one that's kind of like...
Well, I would. My go-to is always the 1989 Brit Awards, but it hasn't happened yet. So I can't do that one.
the 1989 Brit Awards.
The one with Mick Fleetwood.
Oh my God, and Sam Fox. Yeah, yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Or maybe when Sue Lawley read the news and the people stormed the studio.
Oh, the lesbian activists.
Yes.
Yeah. And Nicholas Witchell had to sit on them.
Oh, he sat on them, did he?
Apparently, yeah.
Oh dear. So nice detail, though, John.
It is, isn't it? It's a good mental image, that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Kurgan's back.
Kurgan's
in the motel.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Hey, I hear Candy said you were kind of kinky."
Mm.
"Don't ever speak to me. You understand?" And then there's a great line here, which is brilliant, because he goes off and he's really wound up and like quite, you know, bit of a hiatus here, and he's terrified. And he goes, "I hope you get your goddamn head chopped off, you asshole." Which is exactly what we want to happen.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know that.
No, but it has been in the news and in the papers, isn't it, that someone's going around decapitating people.
Ah, clever, so, John. I never thought of it like that. I just thought it was like just an ironic coincidence.
No, I think he might have even been reading the paper as he came down with that headline.
What's he called? Nyom Nyem?
Yeah, Nyom Nyub.
Nyom Nyub. I was getting mixed up with Re-Yees.
Ah.
Yeah. Because I remember me and my brother used to test each other. We'd put figures in a bag, like the football, they go, Chelsea versus West Ham. We'd put them in there, hold them up and go, "Who's that then?" He goes, "That's Klaatu." And I go, "Very good, Klaatu." We used to, like, because we didn't like sport, we used to do guess the Star Wars character and put the minifigures in a drawstring bag and pull them out.
They always had good names, didn't they?
Didn't they?
Like Chief Chirper.
Chief,
Lost
Admiral
the Sands
Akbar.
Of Times. Yeah, Akbar.
So there was a super rare one. I don't know if you had it. I didn't. Mm. I think we did have it, but, you know, it's got to be mint in box, though.
Yeah.
Darth Vader, helmet comes off, Luke, blonde Luke underneath.
Oh, I don't think I ever saw that. Yeah,
very rare.
Oh.
Very rare.
I remember my brother had to send off for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Did he?
Or was it Boba Fett? I can't remember. One of the two. Anyway.
Okay.
So we get the fella you mentioned earlier driving his Trans Am.
Yes, the vigilante.
The weird Vietnam vet with an Uzi.
Yeah, and a T-shirt with "Hey Moscow" on it. Moscow, they would say. "Hey Moscow." And so the McCarthyist.
Yes, and it's that who would probably be on Russia's side now, funnily enough. And it's that actor, Scottish actor who used to be in everything, and I don't know his name.
He's great.
Hmm. Yeah,
He's driving a Trans Am Firebird 78 that seamlessly becomes a 79 from the nerds. Thank you for that.
So it could be the Coogan. He'd notice that.
Aha!
Yeah.
You've changed my car. It's terrible. Okay.
Yeah, he sees the Coogan.
He would know. Steve would know. He knows his car, Steve. Yeah.
If he was the Coogan, he'd stop fighting and go, "Hang on.
Just a minute. This is right." This. So, can we stop filming, please? Yeah. I insist we get the 78 back. Well, Steve, it's gone back to the... No, we're not turning over again until we get it right. That would happen. Yeah. Okay. Great practical effects I've got here.
Yeah, because yes, you get the now, this is so.
We've introduced Hugh Quarshie's character, Castagir, and who's lovely, because there's a bit when they meet and they go, what have you got? And they put their hands inside, and you think, oh, God, is the sword coming? I'm going to have a fight. And he goes, and he pulls out a hip flask. Hip he goes, flask. What are you getting there? He goes, I got some boom, boom. And he goes, and that's it. But they talk about the Boston Common fight. No evidence of Castagir there. So I'm imagining it's a story that Connor has related to him and he's remembered.
So he's an unreliable narrator.
Yeah. Because he's not there, is he? He's not at that actual duel.
No.
So this is the reason why we've got Castagir introduced is because the Kurgan, because there can be only one, we need to get rid of Castagir.
So well, essentially, what we're saying is there's only three Highlanders left.
That's right.
Or mortals, sorry. Yeah.
Could they had a black one in though? Because then those Devon that day and age, they didn't get a look in, did they?
No, I was going to say,
it's quite progressive, really.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he buys it. He's dealt death through the Kurgan's sword, which the vigilante witnesses and rains down. I don't think he blinks, though, John. I don't think he
doesn't.
He's going for it.
Yeah.
Riddles him with lead.
Yeah.
And he is run through and just flipped off like a skewered piece of barbecue chicken and slides down the wall. And then the Kurgan runs away. People are screaming. And he jumps into a car, cuts the roof off. So he half converts the car to a cabriolet.
This is very weird, this bit.
Yes, it is. Mm. And for his getaway, he carjacks. He pulls a man out in a kind of like, you know, remember Harry Enfield's character? You don't want to do it like that. You want to do it like this.
Yes.
A man dressed exactly as him.
Exactly, yeah.
Is thrown aside, and a lady in a rainmate. Now, I used to work in a hairdresser's when I was a teenager on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And we used to sell rainmates.
So it's like
and what I love about them, John,
bib.
Is they still have the font and the packaging in the cardboard.
Hmm.
Exactly like you find some practical jokes, 1950s, like the poo-poo cushion.
Yeah, 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 sure.
Yeah, you know that kind of that. So the packaging has not changed. But what I've always loved about them, they have a little visor on the top.
That's right.
It doesn't appear to be raining, though, but she's come prepared.
Yeah.
And he looks at her and goes, Mom! And drives off at great speed with her screaming, and showing her bloomers.
Yeah, and a wacky Queen song playing.
Yes. Isn't it New York, New York?
I think it might
No, that's later with Brenda, isn't it? But it's like, you know, when they do like an overture that, where it's in parts.
Yeah.
I think it's the introduction to that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Heavy on the drumming, I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very weird
The vigilante's in hospital, alive, miraculously alive.
But yeah, we don't hear what he tells the police.
No, we don't, because that's the bit where Castagir's body rises into the air. And it's supernatural, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he kind of talks, and it's quite good because the eerie music plays over it, and you go, well, "What's happened here?" And then I realise what they think. My God, he's a nutcase.
Mm.
And the bald policeman goes, "God, this is getting like one step beyond." A madness come in? No, they don't.
No, that would have been great, though. If they came in and they all got their heads cut off in one.
Because
they were walking in a line, you know, like right against each other.
Yeah, all of them. And Kurgan, get out of here. What have I told you?
Kurgan comes in and just sweeps
visiting time is not till three.
Perfect.
So he survived that, and they think he's a nutter.
He shouldn't have survived that, though.
But what
he?
One. Well, so I've just realised the reason for this scene is they show him a picture of Russell Nash.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's their prime suspect.
That's
he goes,
right.
No, that's not him. And they went, what? Who is it? And then when you reckon you could do a photo fit of this guy? And he does, and he's on the paper, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a little crab man who runs a little crab shack.
Front of the he's always after me Krabby Patties. Yeah, and he cuts to Plankton at the hot dog stand.
Yeah.
Going, have you seen that, Mr. Krabs?
he's cutting people's heads off now.
That's someone famous. Is Plankton as well.
He's got a strange name, hasn't he? Yeah. Mr. Lawrence does the voice of
that's Plankton. His name, Mr. Lawrence. Sounds like weird, Mr.
It
Lawrence.
It sounds like
Mr. Rogers.
A sitcom, and it's the cat man living upstairs.
Mr. Lawrence. Yes, it'd be good.
I wish you young people would keep the noise down.
Oh, please do keep it down. the old stereo.
I'm trying to trim this bonsai tree.
Bruce, turn your high-fidelity... Turn your high-fidelity stereo down, please. So the photo fit is very good. They've got a really good artist in.
Yeah.
And the hot dog man is, what does incompetent mean? What does baffled mean? And he's just taking the mickey out of the piece. Well, we know they're incompetent because A, they didn't find the sword in the car park.
They
and
let
B,
the two main suspects run away via helicopter.
Yeah, they only, hey, you drop your weapon, you come back. Mm. So we know that they're incompetent and baffled. So we've kind of, he's right. This hot dog man's right on the money.
I was thinking as well, if I was an immortal, I'd become a stuntman.
Yeah, that'd be a great job, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because you'd never, you'd never have no fear, would you?
No. You'd be like Chip Cobb.
You, yeah, yeah, yeah. If you heard the, if you heard the direction right. Jump in the water.
Where did you get that idea?
Chip, you're like a lamb to the slaughter. Where Jump on the cliff in the water. now then.
Hmm.
There's a bit where Heather has said, does it, yeah, if you can take your mind back that far.
When she passes away.
When she passes away, she went, will you light a candle for me on my birthday?
Yeah.
Cut to, I think it might be St. Pat's in New York. I'm not sure. Yeah. It looks a bit small. Maybe it is St. Patrick's. Connor's lighting a candle for Heather.
Yeah.
And he sits to say a little prayer for her, and there is a little bit of... something's not right because we get that music and he's here, Kurgan.
Castagir is gone and only you and I remain.
But they're on holy ground. So the previous plot exposition by Ramirez says
yes.
Only on holy ground. You can't fight. There's none of that. So he's sporting a new look, is Kurgan.
Shaved his head.
The Kurgan. I've shaved my head. It's all my hair's come off. I've got a bit of a tattoo on the side of my head. And where have my throat got cut? I've got these lovely Vivian Westwood punk safety pins holding my head on.
That always bothers me. You'd want to hide them, not celebrate them.
He loved that look, apparently, Clancy. Mm. They said, "Oh, once he got that on, he was." Some of this it smacks of ad lib to me. Some of these bits in this church.
Yeah, definitely.
Sticking the tongue out of the nuns. Yeah. And then he goes, nuns, no sense of humour.
Mm. He says, happy Halloween, ladies.
Happy Halloween, ladies.
Yeah.
And then we find out the now, this is the impetus for Connor, really, to go to town on him.
Yeah, I mean, he hated him enough already.
Yeah.
But
Ramirez was an effete snob. He died on his knees, and I raped his woman before his blood was even cold. And then he goes, and you see Connor's face, he goes, she was your woman. And then he says, just to rub the salt in, perhaps I gave her something you never could and secretly yearned for my return.
And then the priest comes over. Connor threatens him. He said, I'll see you outside. Outside toilet.
Yeah.
I've always loved that. You know, people go, Cockneys go, you toilet.
Yeah.
You know, and you've never seen that in a film. You know, people go, outside.
Yeah.
Meaning, I'll fight you outside the pub.
Mm-hmm.
I would love him to go, outside toilet.
Yeah. He sort of does that in Get Carter with George, from the barman from Minder, didn't he?
Does he say outside toilet?
Well, he gets him outside and it's by the outside toilets, so...
God, I've not seen that film. I love that film. It's dark, though.
Oh, it's bloody dark.
So brilliant.
Yeah.
I remember that pub in that... It's in Newcastle, isn't it? That pub that they go in. It's so... I remember that my mum and dad... The old pub would let a kid in. And you go in and it was like that. And I'd be like, oh, thick with smoke.
And a six-fingered man.
A six-foot, yeah. Gibby six.
Yeah.
He died. This is about Ramirez. He goes, he was an effete snob. He died on his knees and I raped his woman. And then he says, Connor's fuming now.
Mm.
And he stays in the church and says, forgive me, Father, I'm a worm. And he licks his hand.
Oh, it's horrible, that bit.
Then says, I wonder whether this is an ad lib.
Mm.
It's better to burn out than to fade away. Neil Young.
Yes.
He came up with that.
That's right.
But extra trivia, John.
Mm.
Kurt Cobain's suicide note.
Oh, yes.
He put on that. He put that on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite sad.
That's very sad.
Isn't it?
Duh. R.I.P., big man.
So yes, that's Neil Young came up with the lyric, and poor old Kerr, he put that in his suicide note, and Clancy ad-libbed it in a Catholic cathedral.
And I don't know which story is sadder.
Sadder.
Yeah.
Brenda turns up. Wants to know what the hell's going on.
Connor she's done takes, some digging.
She has done some digging. And he went, all right, I've had it. Right, here we go. This is time to prove something. She turns up. So he takes her to the inner sanctum, the treasure vault.
Yeah.
The answer, the,
we get a lovely shot of the camera going right down to the circular sofa, and then tipping up to see them.
This must be that jib that they mentioned. Yeah. I didn't make a note of that. I think there's a special. It says, you know, certain people have patented certain camera things. It's a French guy did made that thing. It's a good the DLP, but it's like two. I didn't realise, John, 2 hours of special features. I'm like halfway through at 1.5 frames per second.
I once.
I
met
just
them.
Wished I'd. I want to watch it now.
Yeah, I once met a man who I think patented or at least invented the Steadicam.
Really?
I called Garrett Brown, yeah, for The Shining.
I was going to say Kubrick was the first on that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Amazing. I think he said they'd used it a couple of times before, but they hadn't quite perfected it. But for The Shining, it was like perfected.
I didn't know that, you know, I thought the Renovant was the first one that used just natural lighting, and it's not. Oh, Kubrick it's used
Barry
it
Lyndon,
in Barry
it?
Lyndon, yeah. Yeah. All the candle stuff. That's that was
amazing.
Amazing. He said that Kubrick's been copied so much, though, his directorial style. So he takes her into the inner sanctum. He explains he's been alive for 4.5 centuries and cannot die.
Yes.
He was born on the shores of Loch Tashiel in the village of Glenfinnan in 1583. He then commits Harry Carey with her assistance.
Yes.
And pulls her hand with a small dagger into... him. Now, you'd have, she, in real terms, she'd have run him out and gone nutter.
Yeah.
Not snogged him.
No.
But this is this was the pivotal moment, because he's, it's just like, okay. But I find it a bit odd that she's turned on by the fact that he has made her stab him.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
It is weird. Not right.
But then, because it's a film from the 80s, we get a gratuitous sex scene.
There is a gratuitous sex scene. Very nicely lit, I might add.
Yeah.
Very nice.
But lots of sort of side boob and bottoms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both in good shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like all relationships that are flourishing, so they've probably spent the night at the loft apartment.
Yeah.
And he's gone, hey, do you want to go to the zoo? And they go, yeah. So they've thought, well, yeah, we'll go to Central Park Zoo. Why not? Let's go and have a look. And the lion goes, and he gives the lion a look. And the lion goes, stops. Yeah. Bit like Crocodile Dundee whistling at those dogs.
Yeah, in the water bath.
So he's got a bit of, so as an immortal, you have a bit of power over animals as well.
Yeah.
But while they're walking romantically through the zoo, I've got here the shadow of the Coogan. Hovering in the background.
Knowing
he could have took him out there at the zoo, because he's off guard with his lady, isn't he? He's like got his other interests, but no, he's waiting.
Right,
but he now knows about Brenda.
Knowing me, Coogan.
Knowing you, aha, Brenda. Metallurgist and forensics.
Yeah.
Perfect. Talk to me a little bit about swords that have been folded 200 times. So, presumably the wound's healed now, because there's no way, you know, I think it seems to be a day, doesn't it? It takes a day to kind of get better.
Yeah, but I'm now locked in the visual of Joe Beasley being another immortal with the monkey in one hand and a sword in the other.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
That would be amazing.
It would be great.
Yeah.
Oh, you cheeky monkey. Have that. I think more like a paper knife. Do you know, my mum and dad used to have a paper knife that said Toledo on it. I just remember that.
What's a paper knife?
You know, what it's like a soft edged thing you put in the open envelopes.
Oh, right, an envelope opener. Right.
Envelope opener,
yeah.
I was saying that the wound's healed, really, for the sex scene, because that's very soon after.
I mean, that would have been awful if he was on top and just spurting
the
blood
mess.
All over her.
No,
yeah.
Not good.
No.
So that's the point where we've established that.
It's quite eerie, though, isn't it? When you see them chatting at the zoo and you can see him just standing in the shadows.
It's good. It's nice.
It's nicely done. And when Connor walks out, he walks out as well, out of shot.
I'll tell you two of my favourite eerie moments in film. One is the
Hey, Father, can you help me out?
Oh,
I'm an old altar boy.
Oh, God, yeah.
That, yeah. And then she says it. Mm. That is an amazing one.
Yeah.
My other one is Amityville Horror. Mm. The strange red-nosed man with the four cans of beer.
Oh, yeah.
That comes to the back door and goes, hey, there's a party going on here.
Yeah.
And he disappears. That's always stayed with me.
Mine was the dog in The Invasion of the Body Snatchers that's got the man's face.
Oh, my God, yes.
It just comes out of the shadows and starts barking. Oh,
is that the Donald Sutherland one?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, terrifying.
Fucking terrified me. Yeah.
Terrifying film.
Yeah.
Stephen King said that's the most realistic blood he's ever seen in a film when the first pod gets.
Oh, yeah.
He said he's never, because it's in Skeleton Crew, because it's his commentary on films, and he says that blood, he said, I don't know where they got it from.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I like that, the shadow, the background, yeah, menacing. So he knows about Brenda now and then tracks Brenda down, obviously follows him, kidnaps her.
Hello, my pretty.
Hello, my pretty. Mm. And then we've got this kind of New York reprise of...
Oh, yeah, where he drives really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he starts singing it, come on, sing along. And she's like, ah, screaming. And eventually it's all too much for her because there's a really heavy bit where he hits a passenger. And it kind of goes across the windscreen.
Yeah.
It's very realistic.
It is.
Not having done that, but that's how I imagine it would be.
Yeah.
So he's playing chicken between the lorries and everything. So that's another great, it's a great chase sequence. Right, it's not a chase. It's just a nutter driving.
Yes.
And it's so much, it's too much for Brenda. She passes out.
Yeah. Don't blame her.
No, she'd have got. She just went, didn't she?
Yeah.
She said, and he drives.
When I slam my hand down, I'd like you to do an emergency stop.
Yes, that's right. Now, could you just exercise a turn in the road using forward and reverse gears?
Take the Cougar would have been all right with that.
All right. Well, yes. It'll make sure it's the 78 Trans Am Firebird, though. So, got New York, New York by Queen.
Yeah.
And Clancy drives to Silver Cup Studios. I think that's an actual still a landmark.
It is.
Yep.
Yeah, and
they put it back up after they destroyed it with their swords.
Yeah, it's also in the Princes of the Universe music video, where Freddie is faced off with Christopher Lambert himself, dressed up as Connor.
Brilliant!
It's a good video.
A great speech. She passes out. So then we get a threatening voicemail.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's got his number, but we'll ignore that.
She probably had it written down.
So. Oh, she's got it in her pocket Rolodex. Yeah.
Yeah.
The threatening voicemail from the Coogan to the Connor.
Mm-hmm.
Connor's got to go, but he's got to make a very pivotal decision here.
Yes.
And he leaves everything to Rachel and makes her power of attorney.
Yeah.
She says, you're not coming back, are you? You're not coming back at all. Not only are you not coming back from what you're going to do, you're not coming back.
Yeah.
And that's to spare her...
Yeah,
the kind of thing that happened with Heather, where she grows old and he stays the same, and it's just too much for him.
Russell Nash dies tonight.
Yes, Russell Nash dies tonight. And then we get another. It's a kind of magic and a wink.
Lovely.
Brenda's tied to the sign. Cut to Brenda tied to the Silver Cup Stein.
Yeah,
which is scaffolding and a big, big, big set here.
Yeah.
Massive, massive. I don't know if it's a sound studio. I think it must be.
Must be.
A battle royale.
Oh, it's great.
Unbelievable.
Mm.
Practical effects on it. Like, so this scene and the car park fight.
It's
just amazing.
I love the bit where they get into that room where is all the blue windows along.
Oh, fantastic.
And he's filmed it because the ground's wet. So he's filmed it low down, so everywhere he goes you get the reflection of the windows.
It's fantastic colors, everything, the red of the silver cup on top and then the blue once they fall through. The fall isn't great.
No,
you want them to really land heavily and recover, not kind of, you know, that thing where in Benny Hill where they just throw a dummy
and cut
they'd cut fall and then the dummy would hit and then they get up.
I'd have preferred that.
It's not good, John, at all, the way they kind of... It's just not even a parkour roll out of a fall.
No, because he could just run up to the Kurgan and just...
Exactly.
On his edge. Just, perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know that? He was called Jackie, wasn't he, that little fella?
Yes.
Kate Robbins told me a brilliant story. She went, he had no teeth. that guy. Mm. He'd come up, he'd appear from nowhere, wouldn't he? He'd open a barrel and he'd be in the barrel.
Yeah.
And he one of his lines, he didn't have many, was he handed Benny Hill, because he had no teeth, handed Benny Hill a tomato and went, "Will you start me tomato for me?" Because he couldn't bite. "Will you start me tomato for me?" They don't write him like that, John.
No, they don't.
Explosions. Water and electricity do not mix.
They do
but
not.
But I'm thinking, well, they're all right, but Brenda.
Poor old Brenda.
She, it's coming, and then there's a little bit of a kind of James Bond kind of Arnie, where she throws him a pipe.
That's right.
And he goes, "What kept you?"
Yeah.
But with that, we know. I think my raison d'etre for that is that Connor is clearly confident.
Oh yeah.
Sparking swords. I like that when the swords draw across each other and the sparks go.
Although that always worries me, because I imagine that's the actor's probably got an electrical current line going up their arm onto the sword, and they're probably activating it as...
Either that or they've got a standard sparkler that's lit stuck to the thing, and they just go, "And now!"
Yeah.
Before it fizzles out.
Yeah.
But don't pick it up, because it'll, you know, even when it's gone out, you don't pick it up, do you?
You get to be that little sad-looking girl with the bandage on her hand.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. But it's very satisfying when he finally
it kind of goes through him, doesn't he? So he's kind of made it, and it started lolling the head, He makes the final cut.
Yes.
I like it because he's got two nasty cuts to the Kurgan, and his eyes turn black.
That's right, yes.
His eyes turn completely black.
Yeah.
Just like in... it's in... Is it in Legend? Where there's an old kind of wizard that crosses a swamp and his eyes go black.
Yeah, and also...
He's the actor that plays Slarty Bartfast in Hitchhiker's Guide.
There's also the guy in Nightbreed, funnily enough, who's got the black eyes.
Got the black eyes
also,
as well.
Also, isn't it in Legend when the girl, Mia Sara, when she gets kind of seduced by the deep devil... Her eyes go black as well.
I think it is that, because it's like a kindly wizard, but then you realise he's got black eyes now, and he's not. It's like, yeah. But I do like a black contact lens. It looks great.
It does.
And you can tell he's evil at that point. And then you're not entirely sure whether he's actually made the full cut.
No.
Then it lolls off. Mm. It rolls off, and then it's animated. I quite like it.
It looks great. And then you get that beautiful, extreme close-up to Lambo with his hair slicked back, looking gorgeous.
Yes.
And says...
"There can be only one." But then that explosion.
Mm.
My God.
All the windows go.
All bang, 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 bang.
Oh, it looks
massive,
great,
massive, massive thing.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where he's covered in, breakaway sugar glass. I would imagine. It still cuts you, that stuff.
Does it?
Yeah, if you're not careful.
Yeah,
but the animation, you know what I noticed? The tattoo on there, you know those creatures that appear?
Yeah.
And when there's a very, very, if I'm being very pedantic, there's only a very brief moment you see the wire. It's been disguised beautifully, and they haven't done it in post. They've just filmed it, lit it so well, you can't actually see when he's spinning around.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the style of that animation, I think it's very similar to that sort of the tattoo that the Kurgan has on the side of his head. It seems similar.
Reminds me a bit of the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark as well. But like turned
exactly
up to 11.
When they open the Covenant and they turn it up to 11, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's done. And then it cuts to him and Brenda sat.
Yes, the Scottish tourist advert.
That's
the tourist board advert part. I know, but wardrobes really let themselves down and goes, okay, Roxanne got you in a lovely lemon pastel, and that will complement Christoph in the pink. Mm. So they've got like two, they've been to the Edinburgh Wool Shop, haven't they?
They
and
have.
Gone, ooh, these are lovely.
Yeah.
They put them in that. It's a bit of a picnic basket in the background. I think there's an apple and an orange sat on top.
Put a banana in the middle for laughs.
There's some red wine that's imbibed. Yeah. I don't think he's entirely sure about it, because he's been drinking bottles that are 400 years old, so he really knows his stuff.
Yeah. And he tells her that he's, I can love you now because he basically says he's mortal.
he's mortal. They can have children together, and he can grow old.
Yeah.
But he said, I'm not entirely sure with this, because he goes, if I concentrate, I know what people are thinking all over the world. Presidents, diplomats, scientists. I can help them understand each other.
So he'll get killed then?
Well, yeah, he'll die
be
because
surely.
He wants world peace, doesn't he? Really, yeah. That's just a lovely ideal.
I'm sorry, John, but if I am immortal and I've been around for a long time, it's not much of a prize to lose that. Got to be honest.
Yeah, but then there's love comes in the way, John, and if you fall in love again, you've got that misery again.
It's like someone saying, "Right, your prize is we're going to inject you with a critical illness." Yeah. Okay.
All right then.
Thanks very much. How long have I got?
Maybe he's had enough, John, you know. Maybe 400 years. It's like, call it a day now.
I mean, he's lucky he's not like someone like Morrissey, because they'd be just really miserable after 300 years.
Oh, my God. Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah. You wouldn't want to make... You'd chop his head off, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
You never prepared me for that. Yeah, oh, yeah, so he goes... So, then we have a voiceover from Sean.
Have you written it down?
I haven't, no. Okay. What is it?
I haven't... Patience, Highlander. You have done well.
That's it.
But it will take time. There are generations being born and dying. You're at one with all living things. Each man's thoughts and dreams are yours to know. You have power beyond imagination. Use it well, my friend. Don't lose your head.
You never prepared me for that, you Spanish peacock. So, nice work there.
Yeah.
And that very reminiscent of the ghostly Anakin and the Yoda looking on. So he's not really, his ethereal voice is kind of like, he's still watching over him because we might have a franchise here.
That's right.
And then they pan out and it looks like it looks like an advert for the Scottish Tourist Board or a modelling shoot for Grattan Catalogue.
Yeah.
But I love it.
I do love it.
I love it very much.
Such a good film.
I still enjoy it very much. I think it stood the test of time. It's a masterful bit of just some amazing cinematic ideas in that film.
Yeah.
There's a lot of British people behind it as well. So
yes.
It wasn't all kind of like... And it's not heavily CGI. It's a lot of practical effects.
Yeah.
Cast is strong.
Mm-hmm.
It gets a thumbs up from me. What does it get on IMDb for as a rating?
I don't know.
Let's have a look.
Because there was talk for a while, wasn't there, about Gerard Butler doing a remake? That would have been quite fun.
He'll be better to do it than one of the Hemsworths, surely. Yeah. He's getting on a bit, though, but I think still...
I think
makes sense.
Maybe not now, but it was talked about like when he did 300 all those years ago.
They did a series, didn't they? It was something completely different. But they did. There's four films, and then the Mario Van Peebles is a baddie in three.
The Sorcerer, yeah.
And then do you know about? Sorry, I'm slightly going off track here. So I spoke to. I did some trailers for a documentary today, and a guy said, "Are you?" Do you know about the film Operation Kid Brother?
Yes.
And do you know about OK Connery?
Yes.
Are they the same film?
I think they are.
Yeah, so it's Sean Connery's brother, Neil.
That's right, he was a plumber or something, wasn't he?
I've not watched it. 3.5 out of 10, that gets.
Yeah.
But Highlander gets...
7 out of 10.
7's fine.
Yeah.
7's fine.
Yeah. But they didn't. What they did in the sequel is they made it that Connor was a scientist... Still immortal, so they ignore what happens at the end of the first one. And to save the ozone layer, because that was big at the time, he built a shield. And because he'd built a shield, he then lost his immortality. And I'm like, have you lads watched the first one? Because he lost it at the end.
No.
So, silly. It's a stupid film.
So, yeah, a different actor played there was a series. I didn't see it, though. I don't...
Well, I think the fourth Highlander film, it might be the fourth or the fifth, one of the two, has Lambert and the guy from the TV
series
together.
I've seen that, but a long time ago. Mm. But also, there isn't Outlander. That's time travel, isn't it? About a woman that can travel from the present day back to the Scottish Islands.
I think so. I don't know. I've never seen it.
I have not seen it. I think it's more of a lady view, that. It's a bit of a romantic thing.
Oh. Wonderful.
Thank you, John. Nice to be back.
John. Lovely to have you back. And don't stay away that long again.
There can be only one.
You've done well.
Yes, thank you. You didn't prepare me for that, you Spanish people.
Don't lose your head.
All the best.
All the best.
Cheers, John.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, mate.
One prize, one gold, one golden band. Of what should be, no one chance of life that shows the way.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.